session number 25185, Reel 3.
Wilfred Osborne, Reel 3. Can you describe the structure of the gunnery department on board HMS Sheffield?
Well, we had two 6-inch turrets forward, A and B. The DCT was situated high above the bridge. On the top of the hangar, we had two hangars, was the pom-poms. Then you came along, and each side of the boat deck was twin 4-inch mountains. They were situated more or less amidships. Then you went further aft and you had the 0.5 anti-aircraft guns, and then the after DCT, and then you had X and Y turret further after that, and that was the complete gunnery outlet or outlay of the ship.
But the sort of human structure of the gunnery department, how many people were in it? And
on each of the 4-inch guns, there were 16, so that's 64, isn't it, on the 4-inch guns. The pom-poms would have about 6 to 8 for ammunition supply, and in each turret, which were triple guns, you had another 24 at least in each turret. That was in the actual turret, and then you had people down below supplying the cordite and the shells in the shell room. That was each turret. In the DCT, you would have anything up to half a dozen do various jobs. So most of the seamen on board were mostly to do with the on the gunnery side. You could say that a good 70% of the seamen were actually to do with the gunnery.
And what was the hierarchy of the gunnery department?
Well, you had a lieutenant commander who was the gunnery officer. We had two warrant officer gunnery people, two chief GIs, two GIs, and then you had 8 higher gunnery rates, ordinary gunnery rates, and then just the people who, you know, made up the numbers but had no gunnery training as such to make up the numbers.
You said that the first part of your time in the Sheffield was in the North Atlantic.
Yes.
How long did that last?
That lasted until the following year, when we went to the Mediterranean. We went to the Mediterranean in the September 1940.
So you were nearly a year?
Nearly a year in North Atlantic and as such, covering any breakouts, convoys and anything. And then we had a refit, and we then went to Gibraltar and joined Force H.
During your time in the North Atlantic, do you remember any particular events?
Well, there was several when the fleet was ordered out, because the Germans were reported to be breaking out, but we didn't see much action at all. We all seemed to miss them somehow. They got out, and before we were there or after we were there. So we didn't see much, although we, while we were out, there was always shadow and aircraft, and you know, we had quite a thing going on with one of them, because he'd be just out of our range, and they used to flash the light at him, but he always kept away, you know, but he was there shadowing. We went to Norway. We were quite involved in the Norwegian affair. We took soldiers over there and we brought them back. And that was quite hair-raising, because we used to go up through the fields, and we were that sort of gun happy that even you'd see a seagull and you'd think it was an aircraft going round the fields, and you know, it'd go round one sort of high piece of land and then come out the other, and you'd think, oh, what were we so uptight about? And we did land some men in Norway, the ship's company, but they were so ill prepared. I mean, all they had was ordinary boots, and you just imagine marching or going through the snow, it soon did them a lot of damage. So that was one point in the early part of the war. And also, after we went to Gibraltar, we used to have to come home every so often to Greenock, because they was afraid of the invasion. And so we were often doing trips from Gib, you know, when we thought we was going to have some time in harbour, then we were on our way back to Greenock. But we never got any, or very little shore leave. We were there, and then when things sort of died down, we went back out to Gibraltar again.
What was the Sheffield's role as part of Force H?
Mostly because we were one of the first ships to have RDF radar, which was later named radar. So even when we were with the Home Fleet, you know, we spent more time at sea because we had the radar, and although it was in its infancy, one or two of the hierarchies didn't think much of it, but we still went to sea, and we used primarily because of the radar set. And also that was the same with when we joined Force H, and we did quite a few convoys through to Malta. We did the bombardment of Genoa, and we did quite a lot of sea time, more than quite a lot of ships. And Force H was kept really busy.
Can you remember anything about the bombardment of Genoa?
Yes. I can remember we steamed up. We weren't told until the last minute that what was going to happen. We flew off one of the wharves for spotting, and then we steamed round the bay. And although I was on a 4-inch, so we didn't actually fire, but the turrets fired. And for 30 minutes, Renown and us bombarded, and the Ark Royal's aircraft bombed and did the necessary. We then made our escape, and luckily the cloud cover was that they couldn't find us. I don't know what would have happened if it had been a clear day. We might have had more trouble than we anticipated.
Did you personally see any of that action?
I was on the upper deck and saw the guns, but we were that far out that you couldn't see much what was happening, but other than the firing of the guns.
And what was that like? What was the sound like? Smell or anything?
There again, you just took it in your stride. It was something that had to be done, and you know, you didn't think any more about it, really.
What else do you remember from your time as part of Force H in the Mediterranean?
The convoys going through, the meeting the Italian fleet at Sparti Vento.
What happened there?
We engaged the Italians, but they turned tail and hopped it. There was the fire, you know, the aircraft coming over. We were kept on our toes because most of the, it was daylight and it was early morning to late at night. We were bombed or etc. And we were really kept busy. And we did that, but they used to call it the club run. And
why was it called club run?
Well, it happened so often, you know, we'd come back to Jib and there'd be more aircraft waiting to take out. And we used to get so far and then they'd fly the aircraft off to Malta and then we'd turn round and come back. Only once did we go through to Malta. We got so far and then once the aircraft were flown off, we just high-tailed it back to Gibraltar.
Describe what it was like being under attack.
It was frightening, but you were so caught up in what you were doing, you just didn't have time to think. You know, I think if you'd have sat and thought, oh, Lord, you know, we're for it, it would sort of take control. So you just forgot everything and got on with what you were doing and didn't think any more about it.
Did the Sheffield sustain any casualties or any damage at that stage?
No. Again, we were lucky. As I said, we didn't have any casualties at all.
You said you went down to the Mediterranean in the autumn of 1940.
Yeah.
Did you spend the winter of 1940 to 41 there?
Yes. We were there right through till the summer of 41, and we came home and had a refit after more or less the Bismarck. I mean, the ship was in a very bad way, rivets were coming out, the forecastle was 6 inches below what it should be, we were leaking, and I mean, we'd been going from 39. Right round to, you know, it was 2 years of continuous sea time that she was getting a bit needing a good refit.
Can you tell me about the Sheffield's part in the sinking of the Bismarck and indeed what you saw yourself of that action?
I can remember that we'd just come back from a club run, taking some aircraft, and we were tied up alongside the mole in Jib, and early, I think it was something the 24th or some around May, we were ordered to sea. It was during the middle watch, and we left. That was the Ark Royal, Renown, us and our destroyers, the F-class destroyers, and we left Jib in a hurry, and we went through into the Atlantic, and during the forenoon, the captain announced that the Bismarck was free in the far north of the Atlantic, and we were actually going to cover a convoy of troops that were going down to South Africa. That was our first aim. You know, they thought that that's what they were after. Well, they were. And for 2 days we steamed north, and then the weather deteriorated, and it wasn't that the destroyers couldn't stick the rough weather, but they were getting low on fuel, and the Admiral Somerville decided to send them back to Gib, because the idea was that we were going to replenish them at sea, but through to the rough weather, that would have been possible. So they were sent back to Gib, and we carried on to further north.
Was that before or after the Hood had been sunk?
This was leading up to it. And then things happened. We heard, the next thing we heard, that the Hood had been sunk, which was unbelievable, but it happened. And then the next we heard that the Suffolk and the Norfolk were shadowing there, and that the Victorious was flying off aircraft. And then the next thing we heard was that they'd lost her. And it turned out that we were then the only ones that could cover her from coming down to the south. And we were ordered more or less to the Bay of Biscay area to cover that route. And then the next thing we knew was that an aircraft, I think it was a Catalina or some aircraft, had spotted her, and things at one time were very tight because they just didn't know where she was, and everybody was getting a bit worried. And as I said, they found her, and it was then hoped that we would be the ones who would do the necessary. And I believe Admiral Somerville threw three caps over the side, asked in the Admiralty that he should take, you know, the idea was the aircraft and the Renown one side and us the other. But we were told that we're to refrain from that and just try and cut off her route. We were then ordered to shadow the Bismarck after they found her, and the uproar had sent some planes off to locate her. They then re-embarked. The weather was very, very bad. In fact, at one time they didn't think that the uproar could fly off any aircraft at all. During all this, her flying off and taking on aircraft, we were sent to shadow the Bismarck, and through a lot of signals, although the Renown had put up the signal, the uproar hadn't received it, or they received it too late, and we were sent off at a rate of knots, and it is said that at one time we reached 38 knots, which was 6 knots above our estimated speed. All the paint on the funnels just peeled off. And then about in one of the dog watches, I was standing amidships at the boat deck talking to Able Seaman Hancock, and it was overcast, and we saw these planes coming out of the clouds. And I said to Ben, I said, they're going to attack us. He said, oh, don't be so silly. Anyway, they did. Now, there's conflicting stories of why the torpedoes didn't hit us. Some said that the pistols on the torpedoes malfunctioned, or that they were set for battleship depth, and us being a cruiser, they went underneath. But it was a hectic quarter of an hour. There were 14 of them altogether, and it was only the last two that really decided that we were the Sheffield and not the Bismarck. And these torpedoes were exploding and going all over the place. But the captain kept his head and he managed to steer us out of it.
Describe what you did, and I want to know what your personal experiences were, because you said you actually saw the planes coming towards
you.
What did you do then?
Well, we just stood there transfixed. We just couldn't believe it. We weren't even told to close up, although we were near the gun. I mean, the captain just gave the order not to open fire. So we just sort of stood round the gun in amazement to see what was really happening. And then that all passed. And the next thing that was later on in the evening, the aircraft came back again and they were told to find us first, because when they left the Outlaw on the first case, they said that there was no other warship in that vicinity. So the leader thought, well, there's only one thing. But when you think that they'd been with us all that time, and we had two funnels and the Bismarck only had one, and we were only a quarter of the length of the Bismarck, but I suppose they were so bored up that here's a ship, you know, it's got to be, and so they just let rip.
You could have been the victims of friendly fire.
Yes,
well,
yeah.
Now knows.
Yes, yeah, yeah, but it wasn't
friendly fire.
Yeah.
And what was the reaction on board? They must have been furious.
Well, we were, but we soon got over it, because, as I say, the aircraft came again. They managed to, you know, load them up with more torpedoes, and they came first to us, and then, because we were in 10 to 15 miles of the Bismarck then, we had seen her, and we were shadowing her, and they flew off from us, and they started to torpedo her. I think out of the torpedoes, there were 15 planes, 11 missed, one hit forward, one hit aft, and it was the one that hit aft that jammed her rudders so that she started to go round in circles. In the meantime, we were getting a bit close, and the Bismarck, her every armament had been primed with high-angle shells, and the first two, she saw us, and she opened fire, and the first two shells were high impact shells, and one came over the stern, which was an awful sound, and when one went forward, the one that came over aft was near where we were closed up. Before that, I'd been over on the starboard quarter, and I saw the Bismarck actually open fire. Whether it was the shells that came over us or it was against the aircraft, I don't know. But we were told it immediately to get closed up. And I got to the gun, and for some unknown reason, the captain of the gun wanted to sit in my seat. So I stood up with the phones on, and as I said, this shell came and exploded, and all the shrapnel came inboard. I can remember one of the ABs being brought down from the after DCT. His brains were outside of his tin helmet, and he was taken down below, because he died. A piece of shrapnel came through the gun shield. Fortunately for me, I was standing up, and it hit the captain of the gun, who was in my seat, in the arm. So, but it was only a slight injury. But the worst case was a friend of ours, Able Seaman Taylor, who was ammunition supply, and he was situated in the officer galley flat. And he was sitting down against the wire mesh which separated the flat and the galley, and this bit of shrapnel went through the ship side, through a kettle, through this iron mesh, and hit him in the back, and he fell forward, and they thought he was skylarking, but he wasn't. They took him down to the after sick bay, which was the emergency sick bay, and they sort of tended to him. But I still think that they moved him the next day from there to the proper sick bay. And to get him there, they had to take him up a ladder. And it's just my theory that I think the shrapnel moved and it killed him. So we lost 3 men there. There was 1 or 2 others injured, but we had 3. That was our first casualties, of the war, through enemy action.
How long did the attack last?
Not very long, because we made smoke and got out of it. But we continued shadowing her until nearly dark, when we would relieve by the destroyers, who carried on during, you know, the rest of the night, the shadowing.
What was your personal reaction to the attack? And you were next to somebody who got injured. Yeah. It could have been you.
Yeah. Well, I thought, well, again, how lucky we are. And, you know, when you think that she had sunk the hood in 6 minutes, and we'd been shadowing her for 2 or 3 hours, we were lucky, and we was relieved when we got out. But we were closed up all night, and we could hear firing and explosions going on, because the destroyers carried out 1 or 2 torpedo runs on her, and it wasn't a very nice or pleasant night. The weather was awful, and you know, we hadn't had any sleep, any proper food, and we were getting very tired and everything. And we were just relieved that we weren't in the line of fire any longer.
Can I just ask you to clarify one point? You were shadowing the Bismarck some time before she attacked you. You weren't closed up during that time?
Yes, oh yes, we were closed up all the time.
Because you said that you saw her open fire,
yeah,
and then you were called to action.
No, we were actually closed, you know, we were at action stations, but we were allowed to walk around. We weren't actually standing at the gun waiting to fire, because there was not, I mean, unless it was aircraft, I mean, our guns wouldn't have even reached her, but unless aircraft. So we were allowed to stroll around on the upper deck, you know, within the proximity of the gun sort of thing. It was only the width of the ship away from her, from the gun any time, you see. So that's why I saw what I did.
But the turrets would have been closed up all the time.
Oh, yeah, they were closed up. But they, I mean, only the officer of the turret, because he had a periscope, it could see what was going on. I mean, all the rest and all the people down below, I mean, they hadn't got a clue what was going on. But as we were on the upper deck, we could see within reason.
What happened to the casualties?
2 were buried the next day, which was very sad.
Can you describe the scene?
Well, we all mustered on the quarter deck, all that was available. They held the funeral service at sea, and then because they were sewn up and they were on a plank of wood, and then at the end the hammock or the body was just slid into the sea. After that, we then learnt that Abel Sigmund Taylor had died, so we had another funeral service the next day. So that was the 3. Everything was over, and we were then sent back to Gyp. And another sad thing happened just as we were nearing Gibraltar. We had to go either into the Atlantic or to the Mediterranean. And we had each of the three capital ships had aircraft. They had a rotor system where one ship flew off a plane with a RPO or a mailman to fly on to Gibraltar to pick up all the mail and make sure it was at its proper place as soon as the ship arrived, because as you can imagine, mail was an important thing, especially, you know, being away for so long. We were steaming line abreast. We were on the starboard side. We flew off one walrus.
Wilfred Osborne, Reel 4.
We flew off one...